Hi, Bomb Squad. Welcome to The Future of Food, a Radio Cherry Bomb miniseries. I'm your host, Carrie Diamond. The Cherry Bomb team toured America last year and traveled from Detroit to Portland to Atlanta and lots of places in between to ask women what the future of food means to them. Throughout this series, you're going to hear talks and panels that we recorded on each stop. You'll hear from women ruling the wine world, top chefs turning the tables, and farmers making the world a greener place. These members of the Bomb Squad share their vision for what's next in their world and the world around them. I hope this series inspires you to stop and think about your future. Thank you to Kerrygold for supporting our tour and this mini-series. Kerrygold is the iconic Irish brand known for its award-winning butter and cheese made with milk from grass-fed cows. For this episode, we're spotlighting two very different cities, Denver and Birmingham. Denver, known as the Mile High City, is the capital of Colorado. Birmingham is the biggest city in the state of Alabama and was a significant setting in the civil rights movement. On this episode, we're checking in with women in each of these bustling places. Before we get the show on the road, let's check in with our sponsor. There are so many things you can do with cheese beyond just making a cheese board, and who knows that better than a cheesemaker? We checked back in with Sarah Furno, the farmhouse cheesemaker whose family created the famous Kerrygold Cashel Blue Irish farmhouse cheese. We asked Sarah for some of her favorite ways to cook with Kerrygold cheese.
There's loads of different ways. If I'm with my kids, we might be making pizza with like a quattro formaggio with, you know, Cashel Blue and maybe some, you know, some aged Kerrygold cheddar and some mozzarella, or I might pop it into a risotto, or I love making inverted burgers for friends if they come over.
Inverted burger? I've never heard of that. Stay tuned to hear Sarah explain exactly how she makes this inventive burger with Kerrygold Cashel Blue Irish farmhouse cheese. Interested in putting your own spin on dishes with Kerrygold's award-winning butter and cheese? Visit KerrygoldUSA.com for recipes and inspiration. That's KerrygoldUSA.com. Let's welcome our first speaker, Jen Griggs Sebastian, from Rebel Girl Bakery in Denver. Jen was super inspired by the Riot Girl movement of the 90s when it came to creating her business. Here, she explains the concept of Girls to the Front.
Everything that I've done the past few years have been about being fearless, taking a leap, and having no regrets. So here we go. I believe the future of food is rebelling. The name of my business is Rebel Girl Bakery, and the mission is to rebel against the status quo as well as make yummy treats. But let me take a step back and give you some insight into the inspiration for the business. Riot Girl was an underground feminist punk movement that started in the 1990s. Out of it emerged a music genre and movement that was inspired by the punk scene in which women could express themselves in the same way men had been doing. There was a strong emphasis on building an all-inclusive environment and community from the beginning, and they had to fight for many of the basic rights, such as safety. Riot Girl had a manifesto, and I wanted to read a few excerpts from it to kind of give you an idea of what the movement was all about. Because I need laughter and I need girl love, we need to build lines of communication so we can be more open and accessible to each other. Because we are divided by our labels and philosophies, and we need to accept and support each other as girls, acknowledging our different approaches to life and accepting all of them as valid. Because a safe space needs to be created for girls where we can open our eyes and reach out to each other without feeling threatened by the sexist society and our day-to-day bullshit. Because we need to talk to each other, communication and inclusion is key. We will never know if we don't break the code of silence. Because every time we pick up a pen or an instrument or get anything done, we are creating the revolution. We are the revolution. I really think that there's a strong correlation between the Riot Girl movement and what the Me Too movement and the Cherry Bomb community, the Bomb Squad, are trying to do for women in food and beyond. The Riot Girl movement, as well as the music of many of the bands associated with it, was some of the inspiration for the name and mission of Rebel Girl Bakery. First, the name. Kathleen Hanna was one of the founders and leaders of the Riot Girl movement, as well as the front woman of the band Bikini Kill. They have a song entitled Rebel Girl, which is where the bakery name comes from, as well as the Whisk Guitar logo that I created and tattooed on my arm. I also named one of my bread starters after Kathleen Hanna. In the song, she sings about a girl who is the queen of the neighborhood and is starting a revolution. Second, the mission and story. I started Rebel Girl Bakery earlier this year, but the journey here started back in January 2017 when I decided to make a career change and go to culinary school. This was the first time that I was truly fearless and took the leap without a real plan. It was the first of many fearless leaps that I would take in my culinary food adventure. I learned a lot in culinary school. In addition to kitchen skills, I also learned about myself. I learned that I love the pastry kitchen and bringing people together through food. After graduating, I started thinking about the next step, and I knew that it had to involve baking. There was no going back. I had to push fearlessly forward. After tons of research, I found that I could do baking business out of my home under the Cottage Food Act. This allowed me to start the business my way, on my terms. I wanted to challenge, break, and change the rules of baking and business and build a community through food. I started selling my goods at a pop-up bakery that I set up in my enclosed front porch of my house. I got the word out old school by plastering flyers around the neighborhood, but also used social media, especially Instagram and Nextdoor, to reach out to the community, and it worked. People came and came back again and again. I also sell at indie artisan markets around Denver, and every Monday I set up a table with other cottage food vendors at a neighborhood brewery. I love meeting and creating relationships with my customers and love the community that is being created there. Right now I'm thinking and dreaming about what is next. I'm not sure where the baking adventure will go from here, but I feel that the possibilities are endless, and I'm just now enjoying the journey for now and continue to feed and grow my community. I believe that if you follow your passion, you will find a way to make it happen. So, I know that the future of food is bright. As long as you're willing to rebel, be fearless, take the leap, you will have no regrets. And it is a future of food that will build community, use local and seasonal ingredients, encourage inclusion, acceptance, and accessibility. As the original Riot Girl Kathleen Hanna would say, girls to the front. At Rebel Girl Bakery, I like to say bakers to the front. Thank you.
Rock on, Jen. We hope that now Kathleen Hanna and Bikini Kill are back on tour, they head your way and get to try your baked goods. Next, Sarah Brito of Good Food Media joins us to share her truth. Her talk was recorded shortly after the death of Anthony Bourdain last year, and Sarah does talk about how suicide affected her family.
My idea of the future of food, in truth, is more of a wish and a hope. And to begin, I'd like to share three truths with you. Truth one, I was abandoned at birth. Being abandoned at birth, I was essentially born into a lifelong journey of seeking the truth to two basic questions: who is my mother and where did I come from? In the absence of this primal connection, growing up, food became my substitute for love and nurturing, and restaurants my substitute for family and connection. Don't even get me started about my love of dairy products and cheese and ice cream. Truth two, I was adopted at 6 months old. Being adopted, I've tended to identify as an outsider with so-called others, and for most of my life have found it much easier to speak up for and advocate on behalf of others. In college, this was African Americans and Latinos. Today, it's farmers, chefs, restaurants, and restaurant workers. Truth three, suicide. I lost the mother who raised me to suicide in my 20s. And I can tell you from firsthand experience that there is nothing quite like a suicide wake-up call to remind you, or me, at 28, that life is short to be doing anything other than what you love. I have since found and been reunited with my true mother. I'm still advocating for farmers and chefs and restaurants, and I'm doing what I love, So because of this, as well as years of therapy, because I think we're allowed to talk about therapy openly these days, I feel more whole than I ever have in my entire life. But still, these are my truths. And truth is why I believe that Anthony Bourdain touched so many people so deeply. Last week, an article in The New Yorker by Helen Rosner led with the headline, "Anthony Bourdain and the Power of Telling the Truth." Pete Wells of The New York Times said Anthony Bourdain was a teller of often unappetizing truths. And in reporting on his death, Nation's Restaurant News wrote that Anthony Bourdain was a truth teller who cut through what he identified as bullshit. Today, inspired by him, I want to call bullshit on the way mainstream media and our culture, and by mainstream media, I'm not including Cherry Bomb, mainstream media and our culture have historically, over the past 20 to 30 years, viewed and valued farmers, food, chefs, restaurants, and restaurant workers. I want to call bullshit on it because I believe it's doing a disservice to our humanity. The truth is that food is about much more than what's on our plates. And good food is about much more than just taste, service, and ambiance. Good food is about stories. No one knew this better than Anthony Bourdain. Taste is just the beginning of the story, or the end, depending on how you look at it. Stories of where and when our food is grown, raised, and produced help ground us in space and time, in physical space and time, also known as IRL, or in real life. Stories of who is growing, cooking, and serving our food, and washing our dishes, and cleaning the bathrooms, and scrubbing the toilets, connect us to each other as fellow characters in the human experience and human history. Stories of how our food is grown, cooked, and eaten connect us through tradition to past, present, and future generations. This is why I co-founded the Good Food 100 Restaurants, a new annual list and rating system that challenges the status quo and tries to tell the stories behind what we're being served in restaurants. It celebrates the restaurants and chefs that are being transparent with their business practices, what's really happening in the back of the house, from their food purchases and their labor practices, while also highlighting the economic, social, and environmental impact that they're having on the food system. And when we honor these true stories of food, I believe we have the power to make ourselves and each other feel whole and human. In the end, food and stories were not enough to save Anthony Bourdain. But in seeking and sharing the true and whole stories of food, his life was a generous offering to us, a lifeline to our own and others' humanity. We can honor his life every time we eat, every time we buy food, every time we choose a restaurant, by doing what Anthony would do. Seek the truth and call bullshit as you see it. Thank you.
Thank you to Sarah for being so open and honest about her life. If you or someone you love needs help or just to talk to someone, please call the National Suicide Life Prevention Hotline at 1-800-273-8255. That's the National Suicide Life Prevention Hotline. Now we're traveling down to Birmingham, Alabama. This panel was held at the Birmingham Essential, and we loved getting to meet the Alabama members of the Bomb Squad. Our panelists included Kristen Farmer Hall, co-owner of the Essential, Courtney Pigford of Honey Creeper Chocolate, Celeste Pillow, owner of Odette Restaurant in Florence, Alabama, digital content director Stacy Rivera, formerly of Food and Wine, and Chef Amma Shambulia of Urban Ministry.
For me, especially being in the craft chocolate movement versus big chocolate, when you think in those terms, consumer education around food And I think it's important that we all have some understanding of where your food's coming from, what sort of processing it's been through, if any, what extent of processing, what's in it, what the contents are and ingredients, and just more education for consumers understanding that so they can make more informed decisions around their purchasing choices for themselves, for their families. It's super important in terms of chocolate. I can go on and on about that for days, but I won't.
Celeste?
Truly just educating people as to what they're putting in their body and what can be gained from that. There's health benefits from different ingredients and vegetables and fruits and just understanding where it's coming from, what it can do for you, and understanding that that's sort of a health insurance at the same time. I think people get really attached to fads, and while all of these things can work, when I came to the fruition after I had done a lot of fads, understanding what I was actually eating is the most positive thing that you can do for yourself. And I think that, and I hope that that's something that our community and our country and world continues to do, because if you know that, then you already are back to where it started.
Kristen, future food for you?
I mean, I would also echo a lot about where your food is coming from. And, you know, one of the things that I think is really important is that, especially at this point in life, ignorance is not really an excuse for not really knowing where your food comes from. And we all sort of support a system, knowingly or unknowingly, when we purchase things. When we go to the store and buy products, or we go to different restaurants, we are sort of saying, as consumers and as humans with big hearts, I support the people that make this food, that grow this food, that pick this food. So I think it's a really interesting time because we have so much information right now. So I would definitely echo sort of consumer education. When I thought about sort of the future of food, of honestly like the present of food, a couple of words come to mind for me, which one is honesty. I mean, I think that echoes a lot of what we've been talking about, is being honest with ourselves that maybe our food system isn't where we'd like it to be, and honest with ourselves that we, again, knowingly or unknowingly, are choosing to support those systems, and then kindness. The restaurant industry has not been kind to people at all. A lot of females, of course, but just people in general. Again, we've talked about like lots of screaming and lots of ego and lots of arrogance and a lot of aggression, actually both from servers, service industry professionals, and honestly from guests. It's been a lot of animosity and just a lot of sort of, it's been an interesting industry and has changed so much really in the last 5 years and certainly in the last 2 years. So I think for me, the future of food is creating a system where we are very well aware of who we are as people, as professionals, as in the service industry, but as consumers, and that we are just really kind. Like, food has not really been a kind sort of industry. And I think for us moving forward, you know, our vision, you know, for The Essential was to be a place where we were honest about where our food comes from. Again, we love our farmers very much. And there is such a relationship that can happen between the industry, the actual people who serve the food, and the people who grow the food. And I think that that's a really important connection, that we should all be asking those questions, right? Like, we ourselves have such a powerful voice. You know, food is the largest industry in the entire world, right? So we have such a huge voice, both as industry professionals and as consumers, to say we do or do not support these things. So like learning about where your food comes from, who picked it, how it got here. I love that we can often say Jesse down the street. I think the future of food is really shortening that gap between a person who grows our food and the person who serves our food.
So Amma, curious to hear what you have to say about all of that, because you've got a very different constituency that doesn't always have a choice.
Yes.
And where they get their food, what they can afford, all of that. So I don't know if you want to weigh in on that or if that's tied into what you think the future of food is.
It very much is. Mm-hmm. I think the ultimate vision for me, understanding that food is a human right. You know, if the food ain't happening, ain't nothing happening. Of course, if you've never been without food, you may not fully understand that. So I would really like to see a circumstance where, you know, I facilitate a community cafe. It's pay as you can. No one's denied a meal because they don't have money. We serve the best food that we can source, scratch made, organic when possible, all natural. I am a chef. I'm a chef and I am a gardener as well. I facilitate two programs, a community garden and a community cafe. One World Everybody Eats. It was a really cool, beautiful, funky place with vegetarian food that was just exquisite. And the thought that One World Everybody Can Eat, God knows how much food we throw away. So one of the visions could be whatever the eatery is, that there was at least an option to pay as you can. I visited such a place in Berkeley, California, Cafe Gratitude, and high-end food, really good vegetarian food, really beautiful atmosphere, but there was an option on there. If we could just at least internalize the concept on that level as a beginning. And that food is not elitist or exclusive, that you don't have to be a foodie to not only have access to good food, but good food experiences. Yeah.
The menus for your cafe aren't that different from menus from nice restaurants. I was really struck by the thought and the ingredients and the sourcing that goes into what you serve there.
Me and my chef partner are foodies, after I said we are foodies. So we did start off with, what you want to cook? What you want to cook? And just over the top with the charge of preparing it in a way and sharing it with people who may not be familiar with that particular food. So it's a tenuous space that we occupy between what's familiar and what's not familiar and always pushing that, but always prepared with the best ingredients in the best ways that we know how and infused with the cultural understanding based on the community that we work in. And I think what undergirds that, to expound upon what you were saying about kindness, is we love feeding people. It's not a soup kitchen. We love the experience of feeding people. And it's a beautiful thing to look out and see not only the West End community, but people from downtown, people from over the mountain, and everyone sitting together. And in that moment, in that space and time, if the person happens to be homeless, they're in some place that's warm and comfortable and beautiful, and they're well served. And if you are a business executive, you can kind of just experience something different and just sit at the table and just be present with one another. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I hope when we come back to Birmingham, we can come visit. Are there plans to expand it beyond 2 days a week?
It is pay as you can. So we have to be creative. We do catering. And then another aspect of what we do is we hire young people from the West End community and we train them, and we don't look for the culinarians and we don't look for the polished young person. So that is a process. You know, can you show up? Can you show up on time? Can you show up on time without an attitude? You know, and then we slowly share with them what we know. And so in 2 years' time, they've gone from no skills to actually pretty much facilitating all the food preparation. So that's the long answer to say it would take time. We don't have trained chefs that do what we do.
Do you get a lot of cooperation from the local food world?
To the extent that we are known, this is a very new experiment. It's a very intimate experiment, and I think when we started, we were very mindful of being in conversation with the community so that there would not be a deluge coming from the outside. We wanted the community to know that this was their cafe. And then it was so new, we are trying to, have been trying to figure out what we're doing. So we didn't want to put ourselves on blast like that, for better or for worse.
All right, Stacy, your turn. Future of food. What do you think of?
Less for good and for bad. I think I see a media person who does strategy and works with the edit teams and the sales teams. I spend a lot of time with our advertisers. There is a genuine commitment for right or wrong towards less ingredients, less packaging. It's just happening. It is. They don't have a choice. I'm not saying they're doing it altruistically, but it is happening. And pretty quickly, I think I see a lot of chefs, especially the past year or so, thinking one restaurant done right, not 12, done spread thin, right? And I think I've heard a lot of regret about that spread thin part. I think I see less inflated video views and bullshit traffic, which frankly I'm really happy to see. You know, we all sort of suffered from the, like, about 3 seconds after food got bro-y, it got huge. And so much food, so much content, so many videos, you know, and it was hard to tell, honestly, what was resonating and what's not resonating and what's really helping people on a daily basis and what's not. You know, I see that pulling back every day, and it doesn't scare me. It actually makes me feel really good, because at least then we'll understand what our user wants as opposed to what someone is inflating, right? The less thing is going to have its moments that are going to not be as awesome as well. You know, obviously we just closed Cooking Light, which was really hard. And in the bigness of food media came a lot of food media, you know? And I'm not sure that all of it's going to survive. I'm not sure all of it should survive, honestly. I know some of it should. Most of it's in this room, you know? But yeah, I mean, I think I see less for more, right? You know, I think about, I've hired a lot of very smart young women, both at my time at Time Inc. and when I was at Condé at Bon App, and they are a different breed of people. They are smart and quiet and, like, just rock stars, but they don't have to take up so much space. They don't have to announce where they are every time they're there. They don't have to be followed. And yet they're doing all of this incredible, smart, really thoughtful writing. And so to me, that's a place where I see less as a bad word, but a good thing. Make sense?
All right, so we're going to jump ahead to the 2028 question. I've asked each of these women to think about what she will be doing in the years ahead, where she hopes she is, her business, the industry, one of those things, all of those things. Courtney, again, you're in the unlucky seat right next to me.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
And this is the one, this was the last question on the list. So I was like, ah. No, I think in terms of my business and Honey Creeper Chocolate, since we're very new right now, that's big. But for me, it would be a lot more partnerships and collaborations at origin with farmers and then with makers, and just facilitating more things for them and how we can be a part of it and be supporting them, because the farmers at origin are what, and the makers are what it's all about in craft chocolate. So personally, I have no idea. In 10 years, our kids will be like both graduated college, and maybe we'll be just like traveling the world and finding great chocolate. I have no idea.
Celeste, 10 years.
As a business, we've been open for 5 years and a week and a couple days, which is a pretty big deal for a restaurant. And we are expanding our catering, and we are going to open a fast casual concept in line with being able to expand the catering. And with that said, what I really thought about was, one, that we'll still be in business in 10 years, because that's double the time we've been in business, and opening another one, that gives it a padding. And genuinely, what popped into my head is that I am vacationing and not looking at my cameras on my phone and not having to be there day to day and still being in business and successful and giving people what they want.
All right, Kristen, how about for you?
Oh, wow, that's kind of a loaded question. Gosh, so 10 years from now, I hope that Victor and I have continued, honestly, to open a couple of other ventures that we believe really add to Birmingham. The city is one that, I'm not from Birmingham, but I chose it, right? And I've been here for a really long time and have seen Birmingham go through such an evolution of personality and of place. And so I think for me personally, I want to continue to invest in our community in a way that makes it better, and not just because we like to open restaurants, because honestly, this is a really hard business, right? This is not something that people who are sane really do. And it makes you even more crazy when you open these places. But I know it sounds kind of kitschy and kind of contrived, but for us, you know, and for me, every single face that comes through our door, and sort of our goal is to like just bring life back to the space. And 10 years from now, I hope we have another couple of places that were really thoughtfully created and have revived a specific part of food, maybe. Obviously, pastry is my heart. And so I think we definitely want to continue to sort of grow in a pastry sort of bakery sense of things. But just for us, just to continue to create places. I know a lot of you know about The Essential, but what's really fascinating about this place is that we opened it just a few months ago, but we've been working on it for a couple of years. And where we're sitting right now was a bank drive-through. So 2 years ago when we looked at this space, where the bakery is and majority of that kitchen was underground, okay? And so it takes a lot to be able to sort of see past, honestly, Birmingham's history and a lot of the things that we have sort of stood behind and supported or not supported. And I think for us to be able to be a community that continues to sort of see where we can go, right? Because, yeah, like I said, we dug 14 feet down from the back here, so it's really quite an honor to be able to make pastries back there, knowing that this building, which was built in 1887, had really been buried. So 10 years from now, you'll hopefully still see my face and a bunch of restaurants.
Amma, 2028.
I am living on 10, 20 acres in a little cottage with the garden and my granddaughters hanging out with me in the garden and in the kitchen, but that's not what you're talking about.
Sure. That's what we all want.
Yeah. Visioning, we have our third generation of apprentices that have been trained by the trained apprentice. We are open 5 days a week. The idea of pay-as-you-can is a common concept. We have a line of product, because we do have some really good products that we have not packaged. So we have a line of packaged products. We have cookbooks. Mostly we have a community that is happy that we are there. They're no stranger to food. And we've seen that happening with things like blue grits, serving that, Swiss chard enchiladas. We serve organic iced tea every week. And so, and then there's a children's program that we feed. And people come through and they ask for particular things, and it's an inside joke, like, y'all getting real bougie. So, yeah, just, but mainly that the young people that we have trained, are able to train other young people to carry on the work.
All right, I have to ask, I don't know what blue grits are. What? I know what grits are. I don't know what blue grits are.
Yeah, that's just grits made with blue corn.
Bless your heart.
Wait, I heard someone else exclaim. Does everyone know what blue grits are? Okay, thank you for being honest back there.
I didn't until I came here, if that helps.
Okay, that does help. Yes. All right, Stacey, your turn.
Well, if I've done my now right, working 2 to 3 days a week for a lot of money on the beach, being hired by one of these women I've been pulling along because I love them and they're smarter than me at any of my previous publications. I hate to answer the future of media question because the truth of the matter is that it's really... I am 150% certain there's always going to be pictures and words giving food service to people. What platform they're going to be doing it in almost doesn't matter to me. I've worked print, I've worked social, I've worked digital, I've done video. Something else will come, and people will still, because since the caveman days, people need to see words and pictures to tell them how to do something. So I think it's going to be thriving, and I think I know the generation of people who are going to make it thrive, and I can't wait to see what they do with it, to be honest. But, like, am I going to hold it? Am I going to listen to it? Am I going to watch it? I'm not sure, and I don't think right now we could be. This has been such an unprecedented time of consolidation and change, and there's a lot of things to shake out to see what happens. But good food service from a content perspective, that's always going to be, people always need it.
Storytelling.
Yeah.
And people.
Yep.
Yeah, those two things will never go away.
Yeah. Literally since, like, caves. Oh, I need to know a thing. Okay, I'm going to get someone who's better at it to write it down and tell me. That's never going to change, right? And so, you know, its mechanism has constantly evolved. And that's, like, not a thing to be scared of. That's great, right? That I know it's going to evolve. And then I feel confident I know the generation of people who are going to evolve it.
So maybe the cave of 2028 will be the cave again. Maybe the cave will be a thing. Yeah. So, all right. Well, thank you for your very thoughtful answers. We're going to turn it over to you now. And if anyone has, like I said, comment, question, statement.
Hi, my name is Mary Clayton. I feel like my voice is already loud enough. Going back to the original thing we started talking about, education with food, obviously all of us who are here are already in this world in some capacity and care about it greatly and care about, you know, making sure food has always been a way to have a community and that kind of stuff. But for these people who are out in these food deserts, how do we educate them? And I mean, I legitimately don't know, because I'm with Jones Valley. We're trying to do this, you know, feet on the ground. But what are y'all's opinions on this? Because I don't know.
So honestly, I think people like me bear a huge responsibility for this, because they do have access to content, and we need to let them know what's better. And it's cheap to do what I do, ultimately, and to consume what I do. So I think we have a huge responsibility from the food media side to make it clear which things are good and to help them close their knowledge gap. Because if we're going to publish 13 pieces of content a day, which a lot of food sites do, some do more, it's our responsibility to be service journalists and to make sure we're providing service. And at the same time, put a ton of pressure on CPG companies and big food to understand, from a financial perspective, they're not going to survive unless their products are better for the same price. And then it'll happen to some degree without struggle. But that's because we have to hit them. And it is happening. It's totally happening. Their businesses are also in distress, and they have to turn around. But I think we bear a tremendous responsibility to make sure we're not just putting out words for word's sake.
You mentioned Jones Valley, and I think in terms of larger scale, I would love to see in every state, in every city, a program, you know, like Jones Valley in the schools, beginning at kindergarten, not just feeding them, but educating them about food and having farms on site at schools. I think what Jones Valley has done here is huge and is a model that could work all over the country. And I think if it was replicated, you know, multiple times over, you know, that could start to make a dent of some sort.
So we've talked a lot about the future of food. What food trend do you hope is gone in 10 years?
All right, speed round.
Candy. That they call chocolate, but is not chocolate. It is candy. I wish it would go away. I would hope one day when people hear chocolate, they think chocolate, not a vehicle for sugar that has really very little chocolate in it at all.
Mashup foods. I'm over it. Anything with the word keto. Whole 30.
I think for me, it's not really a trend, but so often pastry means sweet, right? It means cupcakes and sprinkles and icing and sugar and sugar and some more sugar. And so for me, I'm hoping that, like, pastry means croissant and gosh, I mean, Danish and a seasonal cake, right? Something that's really highlighting ingredients that, in fact, are naturally sweet versus, like, there's a whole bunch of icing on this thing or a cupcake that's just covered. So for me, I wouldn't necessarily say it's a trend, although in the South, bakery always means sweet things. So I'm hoping to rage against that machine in that I don't dislike cupcakes, but there's so many amazing, beautiful options for pastry that does not include sprinkles. Although,
or rainbows.
Or rainbows.
Yeah,
or,
I'm over that one too.
Or funfetti or those kinds of things. So don't get me wrong. I mean, we have Pop-Tarts here in this case every single day, and I love them. But just there's so much depth to pastry that is not iced.
I'm in a room of friends, right? I would say so-called fast foods. I wish they would just go.
All right, one more question.
Hey, my name is Sarah. Since we're in the South, our food has a lot of history to it, and we're talking about the future of food, but I feel like learning about our history is important. Do you see learning about the history of our food playing a part in the future of it? And if you do, how we might see that evolving or what place it might play?
I guess I can speak to that just a little bit. I do think it plays a huge part in understanding where our food comes from. And I think that so often Southern food has become sort of the meat and three, which, again, props to Johnny's. Like, there's such a comfort in that sort of type of food, but that isn't Southern food. Food that is Southern is food that's grown in the South, right? And our climate is specific to certain ingredients, which is why we have certain, like, meat and three necessarily. So I think for us, like, it's just learning what vegetables grow here and grow really well here and why that is, and that that really is Southern food. And I think that just becoming aware of that connection to the earth, really, like, it's the Southern soil that we, like, live and breathe every day is really Southern food. And so I'm hoping that that plays, that has a voice in terms of what we do here in the South. We have such an incredible history that is full of very bittersweet moments. And I think that while honoring our past and really sort of understanding where we are for the future, it's really understanding what does it mean to be in the South and what does Southern food actually mean? I mean, I know we spoke about Southern Foodways Alliance, which is a huge educator and historic sort of like historians of food. So I think that we should be asking ourselves questions of what does Southern food mean to me? Like, what does it mean to live in the South and be in the South and, you know, choose Alabama or, I mean, obviously we're all choosing to live here now and just being proud of where we live and where we work, I think is really important in understanding, like, what grows here? What doesn't grow here? And why doesn't it? And I think that's an interesting sort of dynamic to start asking ourselves our own questions.
All right, we are going to stop there. But all of you, round of applause for the panel.
Thank you to the panel and to our audience members for such a great discussion. We'll share all the wonderful places we visited in both cities after this word from Kerrygold. I know you're all eager to hear more about this inverted burger. I certainly am. You're definitely going to want to make this recipe this weekend, so be sure to take notes. Here's farmhouse cheesemaker Sarah Furno describing her go-to recipe that includes Kerrygold Cashel Blue Irish farmhouse cheese.
I buy some good quality ground steak mince. I will sweat off a small amount of diced onion and just mix that in with the ground mince. And then I take a small amount of blue cheese and I make a hole in the burger patty and pop it into the center and just close it back up. And then as the burger is cooking, of course, the blue cheese melts in the center. So when you bite into your burger, you've got a little sauce, a little surprise.
And who doesn't want that?
It captures the flavor of the cheese very well and just adds a complementary element to the burger. So it works well. It's good. It's very easy as well.
Want to make your own inverted burger with Kerrygold Cashel Blue Irish farmhouse cheese or maybe some Kerrygold aged cheddar cheese? Visit KerrygoldUSA.com to find out where you can purchase their award-winning butter and cheese. That's KerrygoldUSA.com. Before we go, I want to give a shout out to some of the great places we ate and drank on tour. Let's start with Birmingham.
We snuck over to the Honey Creeper Chocolate Boutique, of course, before our event began, and snapped up some artisanal chocolate bars, as well as some bonbons from Eat Chic, one of my favorite chocolate brands. And of course, we had a lovely lunch at The Essential. We also made sure to stop by the Alabama Biscuit Company for a quick breakfast before we left town. In Denver, we had drinks at the Rhino Yacht Club and a truly beautiful meal at Chef Kristen Glover's Annette, a farm-to-table restaurant in Aurora, Colorado. Our show was produced by Jess Seidman and supported by Kerrygold. Thank you to the teams at The Essential Birmingham and The Source in Denver for hosting us. And thank you to all of our speakers and to the amazing members of the Bomb Squad who joined us for these tapings. Thank you for listening to the Future of Food miniseries. Here's to a delicious tomorrow.